Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information. Trail mix, trail mix, trail mix.
It is trail mix time. Welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks. Trail Mix is the small miniature episode in between our larger episodes here at Gaze at the National Parks.
Right. It gives us an opportunity to talk about a variety of different things. A lot of the times we're talking about things that are hiking related or national parks related, but sometimes, depending on the mood striking, we talk about something else that's important at the time.
Exactly.
We've like voting about or Halloween.
Voting and Halloween, but also car etiquette.
Car etiquette.
We've talked about Asheville, North Carolina, because we just recently visited there and we loved that place. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking all about hiking terminology and how we rate strenuous hikes.
Right.
Because we have found that people throw around this word all the time, all over the place, and there's nothing consistent about its use.
Yes, that's very, very true.
So today we're going to dive into all of that. Let's go over some hiking terminology that we use all the time that some of our listeners have written in and gone like, I don't know what that is. Can you tell us what that means? So we're going to do that right now.
We use the terminology not only through the podcast, but on our Instagram. Some of our posts on Instagram are titled things like trailheads or switchbacks. And those are things that we're going to go through right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's start with switchback. Mike, what is a switchback?
A switchback, if you want to imagine this, it's like a zigzag if you were to look at it from above. But it's a zigzagging path that is going upward. So you're basically heading in one direction and then you hit the end of the path there and you have to bank backwards to literally switch back to then continue your upward trek.
And that is something that was created to like go up the side of a cliff face or go up the side of a mountain.
Right. So you're
ascending. Yeah.
There's an ascent that is, you know, less treacherous than just climbing or somehow going straight up. So Dusty, tell me what a trailhead is.
A trailhead is literally just the beginning of a trail. Trailheads are usually at either, you know, like ground level or canyon level, wherever you're starting, and it is the start of a trail.
Right, and they can kind of be in all sorts of places. Sometimes they're at the side of a road. Sometimes there is a parking lot that is where the trailhead, you know, meets. Sometimes you'll actually be hiking on a particular trail and then end up coming to a trailhead of another trail.
Exactly.
So it all depends where those
trailheads
start.
It's literally just like the starting line of a trail.
Right, the starting line.
Also, what is a blaze?
So a blaze, so there's a bunch of different ways to mark trails when you're hiking. A blaze is often either a painted stripe on a tree or some sort of natural feature. It could also be a flag. Oftentimes those flags can be like metallic, that are in metallic in color. And it's a way, depending on the particular park, whether it's a national park, a state park, or something in between, it's a way that the trail is marked if cairns aren't used. So what's a cairn?
A cairn. So a cairn, which is spelled C-A-I-R-N, is a small pile of stones. If you see a cairn, then that means you are still on this trail. It is a trail marker to let you know that you are still headed in the right direction. And they actually say in national parks, like there are some parks like Acadia that still use cairns to mark trails and let you know like which, you know, if you're headed in the right direction.
Right. Arches was another park where Arches we experienced the same cairns thing. Too.
And they say, don't just go and make your own cairns because cairns are like actually used to like and they direct serve a purpose. People. They serve a purpose.
Like so a major, major purpose.
That is.
And the Karens in Acadia were very different from the ones in Arches. Like,
yeah.
So there's a different way to kind of go about doing it, but they are very similar end result. Yes. It's usually a pile of stone to kind of mark your path.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, speaking of paths, there are usually two kinds of paths. There's a loop trail and there's a there and back path. Tell us about that, Mike.
So a loop trail, a lot of the times, would be particular mileage where you would start at a particular point and you'd end up back at that point, but you would not be necessarily taking the same trail back. So it's literally, if you think about a loop or like a rubber band, it's kind of like that.
It's like a circle.
Peekaboo Trail in Bryce Canyon, that's like one of our best examples of a loop. And it's nice because you're seeing so much of the park and it's not necessarily a there and back. And a there and back is literally exactly what it sounds like.
And like Yosemite Falls is a there and back.
So you're hiking up to a particular point, whether it be a scenic overlook or some sort of vista or some sort of landmark, and then literally you're zipping around. Now, sometimes there and backs can also link up with other trails. So, Dusty, what's a junction?
A junction is literally the intersection of two trails.
Right.
Just like you would, like two roads that intersect is called a junction.
Right. Or loop trails can also have junctions to them, too. And we experienced a lot of junctions when we were in Acadia.
Acadia is just like Junction Central.
Right. And we'll talk more about that when we talk about Acadia on the podcast. But Acadia is kind of like a build your own adventure park, which is cool.
It's the mastermind build your own adventure.
There are so many different junctions that you can kind of take as you're hiking. But even when we were just in the Smokies, there were plenty of junctions that we came across as we were hiking.
Now, sometimes when you're hiking, you have to do some scrambling. What's scrambling, Mike?
There's hiking and then there's scrambling. And then there, you know, you would kind of go up to a little bit more of bouldering, and then rock climbing is kind of, I would say, what our progression
all words
is.
We might need to.
Right. To dive in.
To dive in.
So scrambling would be where you're not necessarily hiking over flat surfaces, where you might be going in between rocks, where you actually have to maybe use your hands to kind of just steady yourself or to kind of balance yourself over some things. It's not a very direct route most of the time. There's some sort of obstacle in your way, is what I would say, for a scramble. Right. It's not like eggs.
No.
No. Dad jokes. What's the NPS, Dusty?
So the NPS, that is an acronym that stands for the National Park Service. The National Park Service is an agency of the federal government. It is underneath the U.S. Department of Interior, and they oversee all of the national parks. It was created in 1916 after Yellowstone National Park and Yosemite National Park had already been established. Yosemite had previously been a state park, and then they didn't have anybody to oversee these two parks. So they created the National Park Service. And so now they oversee all of the national parks.
And they also run the national forests?
No, they do not. The U.S. Department of Agriculture oversees all of the national forests.
A Department of Forestry, I guess?
The Department of Forestry.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
So, yeah. And what is the difference between a national forest and a national park?
We talked about this a little bit. So a national forest is something that is constantly changing, as far as you can take wood from it. There are things that you can remove from a national forest, whereas a national park is kind of like a entity that's frozen in time, where nothing can be removed. It's kind of like sacred ground in a way. It's also has to have some specific qualities in order to be considered a national park. One is that it needs to be surrounded by natural beauty.
So it has to, in some way, be considered naturally beautiful.
Right. It has to have a border, right, of some sort.
It has to have a natural border around it to keep it safe, which is why you often see national forests near national parks. Then it has to have some sort of thriving ecosystem, and it also has to be accessible for tourism.
Gotcha.
That's another major thing about that. Now, a national forest does not mean that you or I could just like go in there and chop stuff down.
Right. No,
I'm pretty sure, because there are obviously rules about that.
Right.
But a national forest is actually used as ground to literally create wood as a resource.
I think it's also a concerted effort by the Forestry Service to, you know, utilize that space in the best way possible. But
exactly.
So it's being preserved for future generations.
And in a national park, like, you will see, like, if a tree falls in a national park, is anyone there to hear it? No, I'm kidding. Like, if a tree falls in a national park, they then will often just leave the tree right there. Now, if it falls down over like a path where people would be walking, then they will either try to move it to a different place, or in the event of like a sequoia tree falling, which happens all the time in Sequoia. There were a number of trees down in Sequoia when we were there.
Right. I don't know if it happens all the time or if it's like more of a, you know, big event, but yes.
Sure. There were a number of trees that had fallen over trails and they had literally cut like
a tunnel.
Walkway tunnels through them so that you could continue walking.
Yeah.
So that they leave them exactly where they are.
Right. Preserved in time until they decay.
I remember when we were in Sequoia that they were saying there had been a bunch of wildfires previously, and we were concerned about that. And they were like, actually, wildfires are
part of the
natural life cycle of a forest. So we want to allow that to a certain degree here and then also help to control it.
Right.
Things that I learned and did not know prior to going to that national park.
So then what's the difference between a state park and a national forest and a national park or just a national park?
So a national park is operated by the federal government, and then a state park is operated by a state government.
Okay.
State parks are like they work in the same way. It's a designated space that the state has decided that they want to keep sacred. So the state runs it with the State Park Service.
And obviously some state parks can become national parks, a la Yosemite.
Oh, and Days of Yore. So many of them.
Yeah.
And then what is a national monument?
So a national monument can be a bunch of different things, but oftentimes a national monument is something that has major historical significance. It could be the birthplace of someone. It could be like a very important building. Like I'm pretty sure Independence Hall is a national monument.
It could be like one sort of really stunning natural feature.
Sure.
Like the Grand Staircase.
Right. Yep.
In Utah.
Yep.
But it's something that is overseen by the National Park Service, but is not like large enough to be a national park.
Right.
But it is an entity of the national park system.
Yes.
Also like Stonewall Inn
in New York,
down in the West Village, is considered a national monument. Thank you, Barack Obama.
There we go. So now that we have our hiking lexicon under our belts, let's talk about what it means to be a strenuous hike. And I think something that we can kind of relate that to for the both of us is rock climbing, indoor rock climbing. Because we used to do a lot of that, and we haven't been doing so much of that in the last few years.
I think that's because we've been doing so much outdoor hiking.
Right. And I think this actually did fill that void of what was there in our life.
Totally.
Now, That void, that emptiness, that dark emptiness, folks. Yes. So the thing that's comparable between rock climbing and hiking is the way that things are graded. Now, in indoor climbing or outdoor climbing, climbs are graded with a specific way. It's the Yosemite system is what I believe is what it's called. And it's graded on a level of fives, like a 5.4 is a very easy climb, whereas a 5.12 would be a very, very difficult climb. Now, when we were climbing, we were climbing probably around like 5.9s, 5.10s.
You were climbing 5.9s, 5.10s. Okay. I was climbing 5.7s or 5.8s.
Okay.
I occasionally did a 5.9.
And we had only, the two of us, gone to one climbing gym, but I had been to several. And the thing that I always found to be very interesting is that I could be climbing really well, like a 5.8 or 9 or even a 5.10 at one gym and doing extremely well on it. And then I would go to another gym, and the way that the problem was set to climb that top rope climb was much more difficult.
Wait, you called it a problem. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you're thinking about rock climbing, most of the time problems are referred to in senses of bouldering, but I think we can kind of still refer when you're climbing top rope, which is where there's literally a rope at the top and someone is belaying you or, you know, carrying you your weight or kind of supporting you if you need that support via the rope. The problem would be basically you are not only climbing the wall physically, you're climbing the wall mentally.
Right.
Right.
And if you're looking at a rock climbing wall and you're looking at all of the, you know, jut outs that you the holds that you can grab onto, a lot of them have different colors like labeled on them. And
And sometimes the holds themselves are colorized sure. for that particular route.
But the idea is that you start at the bottom and then you go to the top using only certain holds to get there. That is what they consider a problem.
Right.
So you are using your body and mind to solve the problem to right. get from the bottom to the top. That's what you mean when you say problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And then again, there's someone that has the rope on the ground level. So if you fall off the wall, they have your weight is what I meant by what I said earlier. So they are belaying you. Not to get too technical on rock climbing because we're not really talking about that. But it is our kind of inroads into talking about difficulty levels.
Yes. So we used to do this all the time.
Right.
And then
we'd go to TGI Fridays and we'd be bad girls.
We would be bad girls and get like fried green beans right. at TGI Fridays. Mm-hmm. And then that transitioned into outdoor hiking.
Right.
So that brings us to strenuous hikes.
Right.
So Mike, you mentioned that a 5'8 problem at one indoor gym could feel different than a 5'8 problem at another indoor gym.
Right.
So I feel this way about the word strenuous across the national park system. There is no sort of like universal way to rate or grade a hike for the amount of anguish it might cause one when they do it.
Right. And let's just talk very quickly about other hiking like grading. Well, like, so what are the other terms that we would say?
They would say easy,
right.
moderate,
right.
difficult,
and then strenuous.
And then strenuous.
Right.
But like that means something different at every single park.
Right.
Which I understand that. Like if you're going to say Arches in Utah, like Arches is on top of a flat mesa.
Right.
So a lot of their hikes are easy hikes.
Well, a lot of them, you know, without getting into too much specifics, are like park your car and get out
and
like
go to watch to an arch,
walk to that arch and come back. Now, obviously, there's backcountry hiking, which we haven't really touched on either in our lives or on the podcast,
right?
But that's a whole nother ball of wax.
Other ball of wax.
So we're not going to go there.
But when it comes to the word strenuous, I think often national parks, even when like a hike is like even at all tiring, I feel like they hop to use the word strenuous because there are some hikes we have done that have been truly like anguish worthy, stress, strenuous. And then there have been others that are labeled strenuous that are like, it was a little uphill, but like it really wasn't anything. I guess like, you know, I guess we're here on a sliding scale all the time.
Well, I think, you know, to jump in, I really do think the way that the parks are measuring these hikes, obviously it's not against other hikes in other parks because most of them are very far away. So it's really, they're just measuring them against the other hikes that are in the park.
Obviously.
So that really does create an interesting issue when it's like, oh, we're on a trip that we hit five parks in. And it's like, oh, so, you know, this hike in Yosemite is labeled as strenuous because Yosemite has canyon walls and you're doing things, you're climbing
and
way
fiercely
high.
Fiercely steep switchbacks.
And scrambling and all the things. But then like you might be in a place like Channel Islands and that hike might be labeled as strenuous and you're literally walking over. You are going uphill for a lot of it, but it's this beautiful, lush, rolling green landscape. And
exactly.
It's nothing that was like
no
comparable for us in yeah. that sort of way of
that
strenuous.
That actually happened to us the first time we really noticed that was on the first Utah trip.
Right.
We had just finished at Zion. We had gone to Bryce and then we were in Arches
right.
and we were looking at this one hike that's labeled strenuous and we wanted to do it. And I literally was like, well, what kind of strenuous is it? Is it like Angel's Landing strenuous?
Right.
Or is it more like Emerald Falls strenuous?
Right.
Which Emerald Falls is another hike in Zion, which I believe part of that is labeled strenuous,
right.
but not all of it. It's more moderate. So we have decided that we're going to come up with our own scale to like measure strenuous.
Right.
And we're calling it the Karen Stone scale.
The Karen Stone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage, Miss Karen Stone.
Now, I feel like Karen Stone, let's bring her to life.
We will.
And then we're going to...
And then we'll talk about our scale.
We're going to talk
We've
about
actually mentioned Karen Stone before on our Instagram account.
We have mentioned
Karen Stone.
When we were
in Acadia.
Here is why I love the drag name Karen Stone. Because there are, generally speaking, three categories of drag name.
Great.
You have, like, what is a straight-up pun. Like, for instance, like, Brianna Cracker is the former name of the drag queen Miss Cracker. But that sounds like Brie cheese on a cracker.
Right.
Then you have sort of, like, a riff on an existing name, like Susan Saran Wrap is a riff on the name Susan Sarandon.
Yep.
Or then you have, say, just, like, a woman's name.
Right.
Like, it's not a pun. It's not a reference to anything.
Right.
Like, the drag queen Alyssa Edwards is just, that's her name. So I love Karen Stone because it is an intersection between all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
This is spelled C-A-I-R-N, and it sounds like a woman's name. It sounds like a reference to Sharon Stone, and it's a pun because of the way it's spelled.
Right.
So that's why I'm totally obsessed. Who is Karen Stone and what does she look like?
So she's someone that wears like all the athletic wear. Like that is her entire wardrobe. But,
so Karens are this sort of ancient way to like mark paths.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like she's like not buying like hiking gear or outdoor wear that is like ridiculously expensive.
No.
Karen Stone knows where to get like effective outdoor gear at like a cheap place.
Sure.
So that she can look great, but still afford it.
Right. Yeah. She's a modern day hiking mama.
She is.
She does it. She does it well. She does it all.
She does it all.
I feel like we should have like the Mary Tyler Moore theme music playing and she's throwing her hat up into the air.
Right. But it's like a collapsible like sun hat that you can get in an outdoor
store. You're going to make it after all. Dusty said I can't sing in every episode and I'm going to prove him wrong.
I did not say that.
You did.
I did not. What song does Karen Stone lip sync to?
What does she sing to?
Oh my God, I have it. I'm so proud of it right now. Her like big, like 11 o'clock lip sync number is The Climb by Miley Cyrus.
Oh. You are tickled.
I'm so tickled because it's so perfect. So now that we've brought Karen Stone to life, let's talk about the Karen Stone scale.
The Karen Stone scale of difficulty.
This Karen Stone scale of difficulty.
Right.
And that is, this is the scale at which we are going to rate the like anguish, like the pain.
The tears.
All of the things that one feels on the climb up to a certain, you know,
whatever trail we might be on.
So we're going to do this with the previous hikes that we have talked about on the podcast.
Right. And from going forward, we'll be doing this as we kind of finish our episodes. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk first.
Okay.
So the Karen Stone scale is out of 10.
Okay.
Okay, great. So Yosemite Falls.
10.
Absolutely 10 out of 10.
That's right.
I'm not going to lie to you. Like the only way I will do Yosemite Falls again is if like, you're paying my bills, honey. Like, I don't know that I want to, like, out of my own health, like, go up to the top of that.
I think
again.
If, like, we became, like, trail runners all of a sudden and, like, you know, our lives just became hiking, I think we would probably, like, live for that adrenaline. Like, all the barefooted people we saw running up.
I will say this. I wouldn't be opposed to doing it again if I could do some of the connecting hikes up at the top.
I think that would be interesting.
But I would want to go up 4 Mile and not Yosemite Falls.
I don't know. I think I remember four mile was, like, I just forget, like, either going up or going down was a difficult.
Something.
But
it is something I haven't experienced, so I would prefer that.
Right.
Vernal and Nevada Falls.
I'm going to say that that was probably more of a 6.
I was going to say like 7.5 for me, only because like going down was real treachery on the stone steps.
Right. Oh,
because
yeah.
The stone steps were they weren't like the hardest to get up. I mean, it's still like natural stairs.
Right.
So it's like you're climbing 600 steps, but going down with all of the people and the fact that they were wet, like that was really
misty
hard.
Misty stairs.
And then the other thing was after you've passed Vernal Falls and you're headed up to Nevada Falls, there was a series of switchbacks going up and those were a little difficult and a little steep, but not too bad altogether.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Peekaboo Trail at Bryce Canyon.
Are we including the hike up to Bryce Point too?
Yeah,
let's
do the whole thing.
Because I really honestly thought the Peekaboo Trail itself was probably somewhere around a 5.
Like, that's what I was thinking. Was
but
a
5. I think once you add on Bryce Canyon, because that was, we did.
You mean the Bryce
the
Point,
Bryce Point yeah.
Trail.
The Bryce Point Trail. I think that added to it. So I would probably bump it up to a 7 with everything else included.
I think so. I also think, like, if you do all of what we did in a day, like, it honestly, at the end, when we were there at the end, like, the angles of the switchbacks were not
going up the Queen's Garden
steep.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, Queen's Garden is an easy trail, but we were just so tired that we were like, even this is
agony.
Total agony.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would give it a 7.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk Mount Kammerer.
Oh,
at the Great Smoky Mountain National Park.
You know what? I really enjoyed Mount Kammerer, and I didn't feel like, I thought the switchbacks and the ascent, even though it was 3,000 feet that we were going up, was really gradual.
So
the thing
gradual.
That was like annoying was more of the fact that it was rainy, which wasn't the end of the world.
See where you like, and what when we say covered in leaves, like there are rocks underneath those leaves,
right?
And you cannot see like when you were just like jabbing a rock into your foot.
I'm gonna say it's a 5. I really, even despite the treachery of the leaves, I think if we were there at a different time of the year, I don't think that would have been, like, if we were there in the summer, I really don't think that that would have been
an issue. I agree. It's a 5 from me, too.
Yeah. And then the Smoke Mountain Loop Trail.
The Smoke Mountain Loop Trail, what, a 2?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a flat hike.
Right.
Like,
it was beautiful.
There was, like, the first part of the hike was a little...
Yeah, a little wonky.
A little up and down, but it is, like, super flat. And super low-key and lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And a great place to stroll.
Yes.
And a great... I would totally recommend the Smoke Mountain Loop if you are, like, I don't like inclines.
Right.
I'm not, like, someone who, like, wants to, you know, go out for 7 hours and hike, but I do want to, like, walk in nature. Like, that's what the Smoke Mountain Loop is.
Yeah, it was great.
Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
It's time to play Memoir Chapters. This is a game that we play where you have to come up with the chapter title in your memoir for a specific moment in your life.
Yeah, some sort of specific event that may have happened to you.
I'm going to give Mike an event that I know happened to him, and then he's going to give me an event.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, Mike, what is the chapter title for that time after you graduated college.
Oh, that's really good. Nobody likes you when you're 23. As a nod to Blink 182. I feel like that's really appropriate because post-college life is... I had a really interesting experience post-college. I still stayed in Philadelphia where I went to school and I stayed there for another 4 years and I really enjoyed it, but I also felt like I didn't know what I was doing. Like I had a job, obviously, but I was just like, wasn't really like in a spot where I felt like I was being propelled forward, but also was having a blast at the same time. So I feel like I was kind of somewhere in like a very like muddled middle space for my life and my soul.
I would... No one could pay me enough money to go back to 23.
No,
ever.
No.
And 22, I thought 22 was bad. And right. Then 23 was just,
right.
Oh, no. Right. It wasn't until I was 25 that I looked back and I was like, oh, that was the worst.
Right.
That was the worst.
Right. And I think it's also just because we're literally old people and young bodies. It's like the movie Skeleton Key.
True.
We've just taken a young body and we hate everything.
We hate everything. We hate have everything. A fun story to share when we talk about Airbnbs
right.
and Skeleton yeah. Keys in Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, what is my memoir chapter?
Well, because I'm a middle school teacher, I would like your memoir chapter title on your middle school years.
Oh my God, my middle school years. Okay, great. Okay, I have it. I would call it overweight and still eating pizza. my entire life, I have like, I was athletic and then I would go through periods where I wasn't athletic and then like I would gain weight. And like, I mean, my weight was all over the place when mm-hmm. I was little. I mean, it's still sort of like that as an adult.
Not
I
feel anymore.
Like, I mean,
Miss
no, not
Keto
anymore.
Miss Keto coming to the stage. Oh my God, Miss Keto. Mosquito.
Oh
welcome
my.
To the stage, Miss Keto.
That was brilliant. Oh my God, write that down.
Beautiful.
Yeah, no, middle school was definitely that time of my life where I was like I was still playing some sports, mm-hmm. but I was like transitioning out of playing sports and then trying out theater and trying out all these other things. And so
you were doing it all.
I was doing it all. I had a very busy schedule as a middle schooler, but
just like right now,
literally. yeah, I do feel like that would be appropriate.
Okay. I love that.
Overweight and still eating
pizza.
I
love that.
And I say that because pizza is my absolute favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no apologies for ever eating it. Here is my thing. I do firmly believe this, that when you ask somebody what their favorite food is, if their answer is not either like pizza, burgers, cookies, or chips, then they're lying to you.
Right.
Because those are the most delicious
they
foods.
Are.
So yeah.
And it's just as like, you know, it's like a drug, unfortunately.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
how they
it
they
is
are.
Totally mm-hmm. like that. But
like
yeah.
a burger drug.
But yeah. So yeah, it was all about, you know, finding the moderation and like finding where pizza right. like belongs in my life. Mm-hmm. And so yeah.
Your pizza, your body.
Right.
That could also be
your pizza, title. Your body. That
another
could be
title.
Another right. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would be
that's like a Liz Lemon title.
A Liz, it
for
is
her memoir.
For her your pizza, your body.
Right.
Your napping.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This has been Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. If you have a question or a hiking suggestion or want to talk to us, contact us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com.
And follow us on Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks and on Twitter at Gaze at the Parks. That's Gaze, GAZE.
And we are here to remind you to hike early and hike often.
And that adventure is always out there.